Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert for the next hour. We're going to go through a lot of Raptors rumors to kick things off. Aaron Rose will join us in about 10 minutes. A bunch of tidbits coming out. Obviously, the Raptors might be big players in the facilitator area, but they might also be looking to add some players.
Might be more than facilitators.
Yeah, they might be adding some players to their current roster. Second half of the show, we're going to talk to Jesse Granger of The Athletic. Is big game on the network tonight. Dallas and Vegas at 10 p.m. He's an Athletic writer, of course. We'll go through the Vegas side of it, get a little bit more insight on that Pietrangelo decision to skip to foreign nations, and talk about that team, which is just looking like they're going to cruise right through the playoffs, at least at this point.
Wow, counting out the Oilers so soon, Ailish Forfar.
That's his writing. Quote, there are no glaring weaknesses in the Golden Knights lineup
no,
at this point.
No, it's going to be, I mean, if we get there, it's going to be an incredible second round matchup because it feels like you can't have the Stanley Cup final that early. That's a bit too hyperbolic, kind of like Jim Rutherford, who we'll get to in a moment. But the winner of that series, if we get it, is going to be in a very good position because Vegas and Edmonton look like two of the elite teams in the NHL.
All right, so Jesse Granger in the back half of the show, Aaron Rose in the middle with some Raptors discussion. But we want to talk, I'm sure if you listened to any sports radio in the country today, about some tidbits from Jim Rutherford via the Globe and Mail's Gary Mason, who had a pretty honest insight into what's going on with that Canucks team. And now I think it's maybe a little bit of
he would love closure.
No, a little bit of a stamp of, okay, all of the media and all the discussion around how big the Pettersson and Miller situation, it's true, because if Jim Rutherford is going to say the following about the two players on your team, I think it gives a little bit of enlightenment to what's been going on. So a couple of really important tidbits from Gary Mason's article, and I'll read a few. I felt like for a long time there was a solution here because everybody had worked on it, including the parties involved, but only gets resolved for a short period of time and then it festers again. And so it certainly appears like there's not a good solution that would keep this group together.
Yeah. So clearly, you know, we can hear more and more about it because this Gary Mason article has definitely sparked some conversation on our networks across the country, because this is definitely a league-wide issue at this point, this feud between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, and just the commentary about it going back to Travis Green's days at the helm. And of course, Bruce Boudreau followed that up. And then they went to Rick Tocchet. Like, this is something that's been simmering for a very long time. And it brings me back to my point, I guess, with Frank Saravelli yesterday, is like, how could you not have the diagnosis for this root issue yet, right? And then if you're trying to find the solution to this problem, why not attack it at its origin? Like, why is this happening?
Why do they sign extensions?
That's another part of it, clearly. And that's on Jim Rutherford, frankly. But like, why are these two, why can it not get along? Why can it be resolved for a short period of time, but then it goes back to what it was, because clearly these hard feelings can't be reconciled. Like, you got to figure out the why piece. And as much as we appreciate Jim Rutherford shooting from the hip, being honest, giving us stuff to talk about, like, he's just kind of complaining at this point. Mm-hmm. You made the mistake to get back in bed with both these players twice, knowing that there was a real issue here. And now you can't find the deal that is at least going to keep this season on the rails, but we've kind of got past that at this point. Like, they just have to actually solve the problem, whether it's JT Miller being too abrasive, too grating, too harsh, whatever it may be, or Elias Pettersson just not being able to deal with the realities of being an NHL superstar and having pressure and weight on your shoulders and constructive criticism coming your way. Whatever it is between those two players, Rutherford should know by now, and that should inform him on his next move. And the dangling Quinn Hughes, which you'll get to in a second, like, I just think that's kind of, at this point, like, what are we doing here? Stop complaining. Stop deflecting. Just solve the problem so Vancouver can move forward.
Yeah, before we get to the Quinn Hughes tidbit, my perspective on seeing this article at this time, to me, feels like, all right, I'm about to lose a big trade, and I'm about to maybe do a big shakeup, and this is my opportunity to tell you how hard it is in this role to deal with these two players that just can't figure it out. And I just think it also is bad timing for your trade leverage, right? Because if anyone's going to pick at the pieces of this carcass, you just told us that it won't work and that this relationship won't work. So why would I want to give you everything you're asking for? Because you clearly can't handle these two stars on your team. So I think it doesn't help the Canucks in terms of trade value because he's not saying, you know what, actually things are great and these are two great players and you really want them on your team. It's basically saying the opposite, like, we can't function with these two players. So mm-hmm. if I'm swooping into trades, I'm going to be like, you just told me the root of the cause is one of these guys, so I'm going to maybe lowball you. And I think it's just kind of like a warning shot if I was in the Vancouver market and I was a fan of this team, because this is the big name of your organization saying that these two players are not part of the future and that they are the parties involved of making this untenable situation. So I feel like something's going to happen.
Yeah, and it should. I understand that asset management in the NHL is king, but so is cap space. Like, if you just take the loss on Pettersson or JT Miller, you can go into the offseason where the cap is supposed to increase with a whole bunch of money, with a bunch of great players that are about to hit market. Mm. Mikko Rantanen's about to hit market. Mitch Marner may hit market. Mm. There are players out there who may be able to be courted by this team if they can sort themselves out internally. If they can get their house in order, it still is an attractive destination despite all the noise in Vancouver. We've seen countless free agents want to go and play for the Vancouver Canucks, but if you just let it linger and turn down potential offers or turn your nose up to what you'd consider pennies on the dollar, like, eventually, yeah, they'll probably come to a conclusion here. But if you just let it get even messier than it already is, it's not going to help matters. Eventually, you just got to accept the sunk cost of losing one of these guys. And again, that could have just happened organically anyway, because both of them have their issues inside the organization, but both chose to actually sign extensions in the last couple of years. Like, they could have just decided to not do that. And what would the return on that have been then? Again, they didn't get to unrestricted free agency, but they could have. I just, eventually, you got to do what's best for, well, namely Quinn Hughes, who is an mm-hmm. absolute rock star in this league and deserves a fighting chance. And right now, with both these players on the team, evidently he doesn't.
Okay, so the Quinn Hughes of it all. This is from the same article, Gary Mason's in the Globe and Mail. When Jim Rutherford was asked about maybe a rebuild or a big sell-off, he said, quote, "If we're going to completely start over, that means he goes," as of Quinn Hughes, end quote. "We'd like to figure out a way that he's here forever." So, of course, you'd like to figure out a way that he's here forever. But if you were going to do a rebuild to start over, maybe that doesn't involve Quinn Hughes.
It's just very silly to drag the captain of the team in this. Like, it's not like pouring, slinging mud at him or anything. But, like, why say this? Why involve Quinn Hughes at all? He's the one shining light right now with the Vancouver Canucks and should be treated completely separate from this issue and not brought in any way as leverage. And I would frankly be okay if Rutherford decided, like, going towards a bit of a rebuild or retool or starting over, as he said. Like, maybe, as I mentioned, okay, one of them's a bigger issue than the other. Maybe both of them are just, like, massive issues. And you should get rid of both of them and start over and make sure that you are, building around Quinn Hughes in the right way, because he is a special talent. He is a guy that you will win around if you can actually build the right team. But clearly, there's an issue between these two players. There's an issue that is in getting rid of one of these two players. But maybe both of them aren't guys who are going to ultimately help Quinn Hughes achieve his immense potential in this league.
I think that Quinn Hughes has done such an admirable job, and I think I mentioned this about a week ago when we were talking about the Hart Trophy and how that's, like, hard to value dealing with a locker room like this. But even last night against the Blues, he had another two-point performance, a beautiful pass, like, below the shin pads of a sliding defender. He becomes the first defenseman in Canucks history to record 100 multi-point games. Like, they should just be saying, Quinn, what do you think we should do? This is your team. Like,
honestly,
if you want these guys out of town, we'll do it. If you think one of them
works, who do
you want
to play with, Quinn?
Yeah, like, how do we make you happy?
Get rid of the other one.
He's the most important player at this point on that team. But in terms of talking about Hart Trophy candidacy, like, he can be someone in the discussion. And he has just done unbelievable this year dealing with all this. And now, yes, you mentioned having your name kind of put in the conversation that didn't need to be put in the conversation. Yeah, they should just be Quinn Hughes' decision.
I don't mind that. I think that's a good call.
Okay, do you want to go through some of the NBA trade deadline items that came up today? The trade deadline's a week and a bit away. It's February 6th, but two kind of spicy commentaries that came about before we talked to Aaron Rose.
Yeah, one involving the Raptors, one potentially I guess not, but maybe if the Raptors really wanted to involve themselves. But Mark Stein reporting earlier today that the Raptors have emerged as a team to watch as a potential suitor for Pelicans forward Brandon Ingram. We will get to that with Aaron Rose in a second, but interesting in that Stein writes that the mere suggestion of potential Raptors interest is the most noteworthy development on Ingram that we've heard it in some time. Ingram is hurt right now. Ingram is in the final season of a massive deal that that paid him almost $200 million. So this is a distressed asset and one that's getting absolutely no traction league-wide, except from apparently the Raptors. And then Shams Charania, just a couple hours ago, Sacramento Kings expected open discussions about the possibility of moving De'Aaron Fox ahead of next Thursday's trade deadline. Belief is that he zeroed in on a specific destination and that the San Antonio Spurs might be it. He has another year after this one left on his current deal. So it's not as simple as like, okay, I'll go play in Golden State for the next couple of months and then I'll go over to San Antonio. Mm. Like, this is a bit of a larger discussion given that he has some term on his deal. So two potentially massive stories that are going to, I guess, set the table for the trade deadline in 9 days.
All right, let's bring in Aaron Rose of Sports Illustrated to help us go through this and more of the Raptors' goals as we approach the trade deadline. Hey, how's it going, Aaron? How are you?
I'm doing well. Crazy times right now, and you guys didn't even mention Jimmy Butler.
We've had too many Jimmy Butler.
We don't talk about him anymore. We're done. We're done with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, we're done until he gets traded. Okay, how about that?
We'll see.
Okay. Oh, yeah, maybe he won't, and then we won't have to talk about him. Okay, let's go to the – let's start with the Brandon Ingram of it all, because obviously having the Raptors being emerged as one of the potential suitors for someone that's not playing and is a pending UFA, like, why does this maybe make sense or not make sense for the Raptors to get involved with someone of Brandon Ingram's status?
I think it makes sense in the respect that if it is a distressed asset, like, we know this organization is open to making deals. And if you can get someone who's really talented for maybe cheaper than they would normally be, that's probably a really good decision. In terms of, do I think it will happen? Probably not. I think it would probably involve an RJ Barrett deal, and that probably isn't something the organization is ready to do right now. But it's certainly interesting and maybe something the Raptors are talking about now. And then in the summer, maybe there's a sign-in trade or something, because as you mentioned, Brandon Ingram is heading into free agency this summer, and I'm not sure there are a ton of suitors, maybe outside of the Toronto Raptors, who are really interested in bringing him in right now.
Yeah, it seems strange to move on this now because he is hurt. Technically, if he comes back, he should help you win games. He would make the New Orleans Pelicans, or the trade would make New Orleans even worse to put themselves in better position to get Cooper Flagg. And I guess this season still hinges around getting that next talent, and although Ingram could be a piece that makes it all come together a little quicker. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't really make sense because you're hoping that he would just like it and want to stick around and... maybe in the summer it makes sense, but right now it just feels like it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, you'd probably have to have those backdoor channel conversations with Brandon Ingram. Okay, what kind of deal are you looking at this summer? There were rumors that he was looking at a max contract and teams weren't interested in offering him that because, well, he's a very talented player. He's probably not a max contract player. And if he thinks he's going to get that max contract this summer, well, I'm not sure where he's going to get it from. But if because of the injuries, maybe that ask has come down a little bit, okay, then you have that conversation with the front office and say, you know, what's that number going to be at? If it's closer to $30 million a year or something like that, maybe there's a deal to be had and maybe Toronto wants to get that asset in. We know they did that a few years ago with Jakob Poeltl, where they traded for a guy just before he headed into free agency because they wanted to see what he was like for a few months and then, you know, have his rights so they could sign him to a long-term deal in the summer.
How active, just in general, do you think the Raptors can be with the situation they put themselves in? I think the $10 million in space beneath the luxury tax and then 12.8 mid-level exception to absorb salary. And to be honest, still understanding all of these levels.
Good for you for even saying it.
I tried. Do you expect them to be big, like, facilitators when we approach the trade deadline, or actually trying to add players like a Brandon Ingram or somebody that's a distressed asset? Like, what category would you put the Raptors in as they approach the trade deadline next week?
Again, I don't foresee a Brandon Ingram trade happening right now. I think that they're going to be sellers despite this recent hot stretch. I don't think that they're going to, you know, be going for the play-in tournament or anything. I certainly think that Chris Boucher's time with the organization will likely come to an end next week, the last holdover from the championship group, although he didn't really play. But I think that's a really easy move to make. He's on a reasonable contract, and what he's shown lately is that he can be a solid bench forward for a team. I think Bruce Brown is maybe a little bit more complicated in that that's the player that has come up in trade talks in terms of being a facilitator, whether it is, to go back to the conversation we had earlier, whether it is a Jimmy Butler deal or something else, his $23 million contract is maybe difficult to trade unless it is in one of those, you know, multi-team, four or five team deals that we're hearing about Jimmy Butler and maybe the Phoenix Suns. Other than that, maybe it's a Davion Mitchell trade just because he's on an expiring contract and, you know, $6 million. But I don't think we're going to see anything crazy. I know Michael Grange reported that the two untouchable guys are Scottie Barnes and Grady Dick, but I don't think we're going to see an RJ Barrett or Emmanuel Quickley or even a Jakob Poeltl trade, although maybe there's some merit to moving Yak. I don't think we're going to see any of that in the next week.
Okay, so we're more than halfway through the season. It certainly went in some ways the way we expected, in other ways, not at all. And I guess the first and foremost in the not at all category would be IQ being a complete non-factor this year. You mentioned that Grange has outlined that there are two untouchables. It doesn't include IQ or RJ Barrett. Has your opinion, or what you know about the most important opinion, that being Raptors Brain Trust, of these two players altered in any way for you this year as you've tracked the first half plus of the season?
I can't imagine you can really change your opinion too much on Emmanuel Quickley. I know there are some people that think he's injury prone. I just kind of look at these things and say they're all different injuries. It's not like he has a reoccurring knee injury or something. And we know last season he missed time because of a death of a close family member. So I don't really look at these and say this is a guy who we can't count on his availability because it is all these different, you know, issues that keep popping up. In terms of RJ, I think, again, to go back to when, you know, just over a year ago when the Raptors acquired him, people were saying this guy's a negative asset. This is a guy whose contract, he's not worth his contract. Well, I think what we've seen lately is that that's not the case. He's still scoring 20 points per game. You know, over that number, he's doing so at a pretty efficient level, even if it's not quite as the numbers we saw him in the second half of last year. But he's shown that he can play make at a high level. I think his defense has looked better over the last little while as the Raptors' defense has gotten better. So I think my opinion of RJ has gone up over the past year and certainly this season. But again, I don't think the Raptors are going to trade either of those guys this season.
Okay, so what's the path for the Raptors then? Because if you don't think they're going to trade too many guys, which is fair, they're not going to win too many more games this season, but they've kind of found themselves in, like, I think, the sixth best odds at the Cooper Flag or the top pick. So hopefully they don't end up in, you know, Justin just said, the best of the worst teams. And then in the offseason, I know they've traditionally struggled with, like, landing massive free agent names. They have before, but it's not, you know, their strong suit. Is it a slow burn? Is it kind of more of this development and having Grady Dick have another big season? I know he's going to the Rising Stars game. Like, what is the window, the pathway for the Raptors to regain some relevancy?
I think there are two phases to this. You know, once we hit the trade deadline, they'll trade off probably one or two of those veteran guys. And if, you know, part of the Raptors' success lately is because Chris Boucher is playing so well. It's because Bruce Brown is playing so well. Davion Mitchell has come into the starting lineup and has played, you know, pretty well. He's a strong defensive player. So if they trade one, two, three of those guys, all of a sudden, you know, some of the guys who have been leading the success lately, you know, are no longer on this team. And now you're bumping up rookies who aren't bringing that same kind of impact. So I don't imagine the Raptors will shut it down immediately. But after March 7th, this team plays a lot of bad teams.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
We're seeing Washington tomorrow night, and they play Washington, you know, three more times after this. And they'll probably go 3-0 and 4-0 in those games. And then you see Utah and you see Charlotte. So they play a lot of bad teams down the stretch. And I would not be surprised if there were some injuries to some key players that pop up down the stretch of this team, as we saw in the tank season. I try and remind people that, you know, everyone loves what Scottie Barnes is doing right now. Well, how did the Raptors get Scottie Barnes? The Tampa tank season, they shut it down and they added a player who changed the fortunes of this franchise moving forward. And the best way to do it is the way that they did it last time. Add another Scottie Barnes player. And how do you do that? You try and get one of those top picks in this year's draft.
Good news for Grady Dick today, going to the Rising Stars game, give him another chance to wear something splashy, frilly, sequency. I'm not sure what it was exactly.
It was sequency
on draft night, but it certainly was a statement. What do you make of Grange's assertion that there are two untouchables? Like, do you see Grady Dick on that level? Again, it might be more of a commentary on the other guys, but have you seen that in Grady's game this year where you're like, yeah, I see that. I understand why he would be on that level.
listen, he's not on Scotty Barnes's level, and untouchable is always a little silly because if someone said, okay, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for Grady Dick, what the Raptors are saying, no. So that line is always a little ridiculous. But I think what they're seeing is a player that they feel really confident about, and maybe the value around the league isn't quite to the ceiling that they expect from Grady. So I think Grady's offense has taken a step forward this year. We're still not seeing him shoot something like 37, 38, 39, 40% from three-point range, which I think is the ceiling the Raptors see, you know, a really, really impactful sharpshooter who can space the floor. And then defensively, I think he has a long way to go. We've seen at times, you know, lately they've gone with Bruce Brown or Chris Boucher in the closing unit or late in the second or half and in the fourth quarter because they don't trust Grady's defense. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, he's a guy that theoretically fits really well alongside Scotty Barnes, who's going to attack the paint post up. And then who's the kick out? It's Grady Dick standing in the corner for three. So I just think the Raptors aren't going to move him right now because he's somebody they've invested in. He's a sophomore. This team isn't in a win now move. Although again, if somebody was going to offer you something crazy, I think of course the Raptors would listen on Grady Dick.
Okay, I said I wasn't going to mention Jimmy Butler, but you brought it up. So what's your Jimmy Butler prediction for the rest of this season? What happens?
I think he gets traded, but it is crazy. And the way him and Heat culture, Miami are going at it right now is like nothing we've seen, you know, in a long time. I guess Jimmy did do this a little while ago, but it wasn't with an organization as prideful, I guess, as the Miami Heat or with that reputation. We were talking about, you know, Minnesota, which is a little bit different. I'm not sure if he can end up in Phoenix because I don't know if two things. I don't know if anyone wants Bradley Beal, and I don't know if Bradley Beal wants to go anywhere else. I know he wants to go to a contender and he doesn't like cold weather. There was a report to that extent the other day. So he wants to go somewhere warm and he wants to go to a good team. And, you know, which team with warm weather and contender status wants to bring him in? I'm not sure there is one. So, you know, we're hearing today that maybe Jimmy Butler could end up on the Warriors, but like the other thing I wonder about is you're acquiring a 35-year-old who has a track record in multiple stops of maybe not always being the best teammate. We know playoff Jimmy is exceptional, but he's toward the end of his career. He's 35 years old. He's not having the best year and he's going to want another long-term deal. Like he's not heading into free agency and saying, you know, I'll take the, you know, the veteran minimum or mid-level exception. This is a guy who's going to want a ton of money. So you're agreeing to pay him into his 36, 37, 38 year. And that's something that I think is potentially a little bit dangerous.
It's definitely tricky. But you know what? I think this will be a fun trade deadline when it rolls around next week, especially if the Raptors could just get their hands in there, make something happen, whether it's just taking on some money or facilitating. It'd be nice to have some news. Aaron, we appreciate you jumping on. Best of luck with the way the trade deadline goes, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. That's Aaron Rosa, Sports Illustrated. I think probably not a Brandon Ingram to the Raptors fit there.
No, I mean, at least not right away. I think the back channeling thing is interesting. Oh, no one likes you? Well, we're kind of into it, Brandon. Maybe we can revisit a little bit later because, yeah, acquiring now doesn't really make much sense, but I could see him being a worthwhile asset to chase in the summer when you're trying to be better immediately with the help of a hopefully high draft pick at the end of the season. But just for a little background on Ingram, because a couple of years ago, be like, okay, we're talking here, because this is a guy who was the key piece in return for the Anthony Davis trade that sent him to the Lakers. And of course, Davis won a title in LA, and Brandon Ingram turned around and improved his points per game by 5.5 in his first season with New Orleans, won the most improved player, signed a huge deal, 5-year contract, pay him just short of $200 million, but then nothing really changes from year to year with him. Like he just kind of remains a 23-point guy, 5-5, misses time every single season, was reduced to about 55 games per season on average. So he hasn't really been able to take that next step and remains like a productive player, but one that you can't really count on. And injuries have just decimated this season. He hasn't played since December 7th. So he's definitely a distressed asset, but a player that's shown that he can be really impactful on the floor when available.
All right, we'll keep an eye on all of the reports regarding Brandon Ingram, the Raptors, Jimmy Butler, maybe a couple other things pop out with De'Aaron Fox as well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to chat with Jesse Granger of The Athletic to tee up tonight's Stars Vegas Golden Knights game.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. For the next 30 minutes, we just chatted with Aaron Rose from Sports Illustrated about the NBA trade deadline and what might or might not involve your Toronto Raptors. It's already next Thursday.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy how quickly the season has felt.
Yeah, and Rose cool on the idea that Brendan Ingram could be a member of the Toronto Raptors by...
It's definitely a trickier one.
Thursday next week.
Like, just trickier to, and not trickier to make it happen, but to kind of evaluate. And that's what Mark Stein was saying. Like, this would be easier to understand if he had been playing in his $36 million contract right now and showcasing himself. But it's kind of a mystery box. Did you ever play Jackpot when you were a kid?
You know that game? Like 500 up?
What do you mean?
Well, you're gonna have to explain the game.
Jackpot was where you'd be standing...
Yeah, that's 500 up, isn't it?
Well, we called the jackpot, okay. And you'd throw a ball, and you'd say 100, 1,000, 1,000,000, mm-hmm. And then sometimes you'd say mystery box, and then if the person you liked caught it, you'd be like, oh, jackpot, and then if it was
I didn't realize it was a preteen flirting sort of game.
If it was person you didn't really love as much, you'd be like, bankrupt.
Gotta be honest, I played some 500 up in the last couple weeks.
Why?
Still a kid at heart. It's a good beach game.
Yeah, okay. Well, have you been at the beach in the last couple of weeks?
Start of the month, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you did go away on vacation. Must be nice. Okay, well, I called it jackpot. So it's kind of like that. Brendan Ingram, you could catch the mystery box, and it could be a worthwhile investment. It could be a guy that's just going to go away in the summer, or it could be a jackpot.
Speaking of jackpot, getting Victor Wembanyama as the San Antonio Spurs, that could lead to jackpots because apparently De'Aaron Fox, who has basically come to the conclusion here that he's going to part with the Sacramento Kings before the trade deadline, despite having another year and despite the Kings playing really well since making a coaching change. Well, apparently he wants to be a member of the Spurs. And there's a gravitational pull, right? You get a player like Victor Wembanyama, you can get the next guy. And, like, again, this isn't like apples to apples comparison with the Toronto Raptors. But, like, I don't know if they have that pull. Does Scotty Barnes provide that pull? Because we know the Raptors are going to be looking for that next player to pair with Barnes, with Grady Dick, with the next draft pick that comes in, and with IQ or Barrett if they survive all this. It's imperative that they get that next guy, but it's so much easier when you have the guy, and the Spurs have the guy in Victor Wembanyama, and they might get De'Aaron Fox just basically for existing and for having Victor Wembanyama ahead of the trade deadline here.
I don't think the Victor Wembanyama season has been discussed enough because Spurs aren't a team that we're really chatting about much, but I think next year he could easily win an MVP, like, or be in the discussion as of an MVP. But this year we haven't spent much time talking about Wemby, but if he's able to start recruiting people just because he exists, like, that guy is one of a kind. We already know that, but what he can maybe do in terms of recruiting.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's imperative that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wins it this year, because we want to see another Canadian win the NBA MVP. But yeah, you're right. They slow played this a little bit, and you wonder if they slow played it knowing, as we're talking about back channeling, that De'Aaron Fox wanted to be potentially partnering with Wemby. And, like, that's a great thing. It's not like, oh, De'Aaron Fox wants to go to LA or Boston or whatever major market might be available. He just wants to go play with a great player and win despite the market. I'm not saying San Antonio is a poor market, but San Antonio without Wemby is a little different than San Antonio with Wemby. And it's just cool that we're going to see potentially a great player just go play for a team because the opportunity is there to play with a generational type player in Victor Wembanyama.
So with the NBA Rising Stars roster listed for the challenge, he's in the sophomore team, which makes sense, and so is Grady Dick. But I mean, most likely he's going to be named as one of the reserves for the All-Star game. So if he's on the Rising Stars team and they make the championship on Friday, he'll have to choose to either play for them or play in the as a reserve for the other team on Sunday night, because you can only compete for one of the three teams.
Okay.
So would you rather go and win a Rising Stars or be, like, a reserve for the NBA All-Star game?
Are you like forever an NBA All-Star if you get into that?
I don't know the rules, because most likely. He's going to be an NBA All-Star before, like, he's going to be one.
You think Grady Dick for sure will be an
NBA All-Star? Well, I'm talking about Victor Wembanyama.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were on the topic of Dick.
No. Victor Wembanyama. It's going to be a reserve, not Grady Dick.
Wemby's above the rising stars.
He's on the roster.
But he's above it. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's an all-star.
Yeah.
He's going to win defensive player of the year. He's one of the top.
You don't get to be a rising star forever.
No.
This is your last chance.
Yeah.
I think he'll be in a lot of all-star games.
I think he wants to be in the big game.
Yeah. It's really nice that you thought that Grady Dick was a possible reserve for the All-Star game.
Yeah, we can dream one day.
Maybe one day.
I mean, maybe Masai Ujiri feels that way.
That he sure does. Face a future star, maybe, of the league. Okay, let's shift over to a little hockey talk. We've got a doubleheader on Sportsnet up next. Boston and Buffalo, followed by what I think is the bigger of the two, Dallas and Vegas. That's a 10 p.m. start here on Sportsnet. Let's bring in Jesse Granger of The Athletic to help us tee it up. Jesse, we appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing well. I was going through some of your articles up on The Athletic, and just about a week and a bit ago, you wrote a mid-season report card, and I go to click on it, and it's got the lead, right? So you wrote, there are no glaring weaknesses in the Golden Knights lineup to this point as they sit atop the division again. I'm like, oh, how nice. What a nice way to start an article. So I wonder from that jumping off point, just, you know, we're talking trade deadline here at the NBA, and obviously the NHL is a little bit around the corner, but I just wonder in terms of the vibes around this team and how they approach the trade deadline with such confidence in their roster and things kind of cooking on all cylinders.
Yeah, they really don't have many glaring weaknesses. They have been playing a little worse as of late. They've gone through a stretch here over the last couple of weeks where they've lost some games and the scoring has dried up a bit. But this is a team that has relied on its defense for a long time, and they still have all of those pieces in place. They play not only good, just like the structure of the team, but the personnel are excellent on the back end with Petrangelo and Theodore and Hanifin and Braden McNabb. And the goaltending has played well. Like I said, the goaltending went through a tough stretch over the last couple of weeks with the rest of the team, but as a whole for this season, the goaltending has been very good. So this is a team that's hard to score on. They've lost some scoring themselves, but they've had some other players step up. So yeah, it's hard to find a really obvious spot that they need to add.
Yeah, definitely. There's some serious players, Jesse, in the Western Conference. Obviously, there's the Winnipeg Jets, who've had this great season. Colorado's lurking despite trading one of the top 10 players in the league out of town. Minnesota, go down the list. There's a lot of great teams in the Western Conference. But it feels like everything Edmonton does is with Vegas in mind, and with everything Vegas is doing is with Edmonton in mind. Is that true? Or is Vegas at a point where they're just sort of worried about themselves when they're team building?
I mean, I think that it's mostly just worried about themselves, but you're not wrong. It does seem that those two teams in the Pacific Division are on a course for each other at some point. They didn't play last year because Vegas lost to the Stars in the first round, but the year before that, the Golden Knights had to go through them to get to the Cup final. We're heading towards another playoff matchup between these two teams. They're the two best in the Pacific, I think. The Kings are playing good hockey, so you can't forget about them, but it seems like the Oilers and Golden Knights are the teams to beat, and they play such different styles of hockey. The Oilers are more high-flying. They like to play an open game with lots of space and transition, and the Golden Knights are more of a defensive team that try to lock you down and lean on you with like a heavier roster. So, yeah, I do think that they've got the Oilers in mind, and they're missing William Karlsson right now, who is one of the biggest key pieces of when those teams match up. Karlsson is the defensive matchup that plays Connor McDavid. If you remember 2 years ago, the Oilers were avoiding that matchup at all costs. They were trying to get McDavid off the ice against Karlsson, and Carlson's out right now with a lower body injury week to week, not expected to be back anytime soon. So that is of some concern when it comes to that matchup. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Golden Knights add a defensive-minded centerman to kind of shore up that depth at the deadline.
Where are you at with Jack Eichel's? I wrote the word resurgence, but I'm like, is that really like the right word? Is he just being underrated and we just aren't talking about him enough? This season has been pretty unbelievable for him, and definitely being discussed in some of the longer ballot Hart Trophy odds. But what he's been able to bring to this team, that consistency this season, and maybe if he is, in your sense, in the Hart Trophy, longer odds or shorter?
Yeah, he's been awesome. This is the best hockey I've ever seen Jack Eichel play this year. Bruce Cassidy's said the same thing. And I think he belongs in the conversation with the Hart Trophy. The only problem is I don't know if he's going to get up there to 120-something, 130 points, the way some of these other guys will. Undoubtedly, they will. The guy who wins Hart is probably going to have 120 points. I don't know if Eichel will get to that, and I think that that might hold him out of that conversation, as good as he's been all over the ice. I will say that I don't see his name in the Selke conversation at all for best defensive forward, and I think he absolutely belongs in that conversation. That's one of the most impressive things about his season is just how good he's been defensively all over the ice for Vegas. He's everything for this team. He's their number one 5-on-5 guy. He transports the puck better than anyone in the team in terms of getting it into the offensive zone and creating plays. He's the number one power play option. When they're on the power play, the puck's on his stick, and this is the best their power play has looked in years. I think they're top five in the league right now, and they've never been up there. And a lot of that is because Jack Eichel's fueling it. And he's the number one option on the penalty kill. He plays more penalty kill minutes than any forward on the team. And if you look at all these other top players, whether it's Dreisaitl or Kaprizov or McDavid, none of them kill penalties, really. You look at like their share of their team's penalty minutes, and it's usually 2%, 3%, 5%, somewhere around there. Jack Eichel plays 48% of the Golden Knights' penalty killing minutes. So I think that that's really what separates his style and his game this year from the other ones. And it's funny because his reputation when he was in Buffalo was, well, this guy puts up all these points, but he doesn't play winning hockey. And now it's just the exact opposite here in Vegas. Like, this guy, he doesn't cheat for offense. He gets the tough defensive matchups. He starts in his own end a lot and he kills penalties. He does everything the Golden Knights need him to win games. It's been a lot of fun to watch him.
We're talking to Jesse Granger of The Athletic, who knows Alex Pietrangelo probably better than any media member currently in the game. So we got to ask, like, what do we know about his decision to skip out on Team Canada for the Four Nations face-off? What's worth speculating on? Like, can you tell us some truths about that decision and why he's chosen to look past representing his country next month?
Yeah, he said today it was a tough decision because representing Canada means a lot to him. He has represented Canada in the past in the Olympics. He's one of the few guys still around that did that already. He mentioned today that his family was looking forward to it. His kids, his wife was looking forward to watching him in a Team Canada sweater, but it was a tough decision he had to make. And I think it's just a case of, this is a 35-year-old player who plays huge minutes. I mean, he leads the Golden Knights in ice time basically every night. He's out there 22, 25 minutes. And for a guy his age, that's a big workload. And I don't think they want to take that. They don't want to lower that workload because he's been so good back there. I think they want to keep playing him 25 minutes. And I don't know exactly what the injury is or the ailment, as the team's calling it. But he just basically said he needs those 2 weeks to be able to recover. It's something that he's been dealing with for a long time. I don't know if that means he's going to have a very minor procedure on something, or if that just means he needs those 2 weeks to rehab. You know, some injuries, they aren't going to get better if you're playing hockey on them every other night, and they might not get worse, but you're just going to have that nagging injury for as long as you're playing hockey. And he thinks that he can take that window while the Four Nations tournament's being played to remedy it somehow, whether it's through procedure, whether it's through just time off the ice. And he thinks he'll be better off when the season ramps back up after February, and the Golden Knights need him. They're counting on him a lot. So I don't fault him or any player who's dealing with an injury for choosing the team that's paying them, in his case, $9 million a year to try to win a Stanley Cup, and choosing that over representing your country in a tournament that has just come together.
As Canadians, we're struggling with it a little bit, though, because, you know, I think it's the first of maybe many more, maybe no more people deciding, as you mentioned, to play for the team that is paying them and try to chase a Stanley Cup. But I wonder if it was more of a conversation like around the locker room, around the team, or like a surprise to anyone. We were surprised, but we're not in that market. So, like, is it just like, hey, I'm not playing, we'll move on? Or did it at least get a little bit more buzz within the team when he made that decision?
Yeah, I didn't talk to the other guys about that specifically. I mean, it did come as a surprise to everyone. He went and told Doug Armstrong, the Team Canada GM, personally before it got out. But yes, it was a surprise to everyone. This team has as many, I think Florida has the most players playing in Four Nations, but Vegas is right behind them. Mm-hmm. They've got quite a few guys. Obviously, his Shea Theodore, defenseman, might have been his defensive partner on Team Canada. Mark Stone, Golden Knights captain, is playing there. Jack Eichel and Noah Hanifin are both playing for the U.S. And William Karlsson doesn't look like he's going to end up playing for Sweden because he's hurt, but he was. And obviously the goalie, Aiden Hill, for Team Canada. So there are a lot of Four Nations players on this team that I'm sure he spoke about it with, but not too much buzz around it other than the fact that they're all hoping that their number one defenseman is healthier when that break ends than he is right now.
So going back to where we started, you mentioned, like, you're writing, yeah, they're not playing as well, but no real holes on this roster. And I think it's interesting because Pavel Dorofiev, I struggle with that one, has 21 goals. He's having a great season, but he's essentially the only Golden Knights draft pick that plays, that has played meaningfully for the team in its existence. So how does Vegas continue to, like, supplement its roster without, you know, leaning on the traditional means, which is you draft and develop players and have them fill the next spot on the roster?
Yeah, you're right. They definitely haven't had a ton of contribution. I'll throw Nick Hague in there. He was a second-round pick in their first draft ever, and he's played a bunch of minutes. He's not a big scorer. But other than those two, 100% right, this team doesn't draft and develop as most teams do. It changed when they just had that immediate success out of the expansion draft. So this team just hoarded draft picks and prospects during that period. And they've since spent all of those picks and prospects. They've traded them all away to acquire players in a win-now mode, more in the prime of their career. I will say that the cupboard is finally bare. This team has traded, I want to say, 6 first-round picks, if you count the picks and the players that they'd already taken, like Nick Suzuki to Montreal, for example. But they every deadline, basically, they've spent a first-round pick or the equivalent and just added big-name players like Eichel. Last year, it was Hertl and Hanifin. They traded for Mark Stone. They traded for Max Pacioretty back in the day. So they haven't used those players in terms of getting them into their system and having them long enough, but they have turned them into picks or into players that are currently in their prime. And I do think that that is I think they've exposed a market weak inefficiency, I guess is one way to put it, is I think that maybe some GMs value picks and prospects more than they should. And like you trade a second round pick for, or Zach Dean was a first round pick and they traded him to St. Louis for Ivan Barbashev the year that they won the cup. And Barbashev was a huge piece of that cup winning team. He plays with Jack Eichel. He scored a bunch of goals. He's the physical presence on that line. And you trade a prospect that you hope someday becomes as good as a player of Ivan Barbashev. And I just think that a lot of GMs love those picks and prospects because of the promising future of what they could be. And I think the Golden Knights have kind of turned that into, let's just take the player who's already good and add him to our team. And it might hurt them down the road. I mean, eventually the bills are going to be due, right? The Piper has to be paid eventually at some point, but they haven't reached that point yet. And they've got a really good team because of it.
We're talking to Jesse Granger of The Athletic, and I know you do a lot of goalie analysis as well. So this is like an adjacent way to ask about Logan Thompson as well. We've got that game tonight, Washington and Calgary on Sportsnet West. Dustin Wolf, who's having an amazing season. That's a great matchup. But more specifically, just like the season that Logan Thompson's had, his contract, the way that he kind of bet on himself and went to Washington when he was told he wasn't going to be the starter in Vegas. Like, how's that being, I guess, received in that market when he's having such an incredible season?
Yeah, it's really cool to see how he's continued his success in Washington and, if anything, gotten even better. He is such an interesting player in terms of, like, the arc his career has taken. And I think the reason his career has gone the way it has is because he plays such a unique style. Like, if you watch Logan Thompson play, he doesn't look like other goalies. Not only does he catch with his right hand, which is obviously rare, but he plays so wide and his legs get real wide and he's real crouchy and he kind of stabs at pucks with his hands. And I think that that's part of what the reason it took him so long to break into the NHL is I think goalie coaches see that and they think, well, yeah, it's working at this level, but I don't know if that is going to work against the best shooters in the world. And he's proven that it does. And I think that that's also part of the reason he wasn't the starter here in Vegas is I think that Aiden Hill is a more traditional, bigger, blocky goalie that is a little more consistent. And I just think that they wanted that in Vegas. And I think Thompson is proving that, yes, I do things a little differently, but it works for me. And he's been awesome this year. He's top three in save percentage, goal saved above expected. He's been really, really good. He's fun to watch. He's an athletic, acrobatic goalie who can make big, high-flying saves. So he's fun to watch. I think he deserves the money. It's going to be fun to see how he progresses now that he's got a full, I mean, $6 million a year. The guy was making below the league minimum for the last 3 years. He's never really had this paycheck. So now he's got a little consistency, a little comfortability in his spot. Fun to see where he goes from here.
Not for Team Canada. Will not be in Montreal or Boston for the Four Nations face-off, but he's pretty set up now with that big money contract. So Vegas, as you know, has Aiden Hill win a Stanley Cup. Stuart Skinner proven to be serviceable at the very least, if not a bit up and down for the Edmonton Oilers, but definitely a guy that can put them in good positions like Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. You got Thatcher Demko is maybe, coming back from injury, maybe not quite the same guy. And then in Calgary, you got Dustin Wolf. Is it possible, Jesse, because you're the goaltending guy, that Calgary has the best goaltender in the Pacific Division?
He might be here in a few. I mean, Thatcher Demko, when healthy, I'll still take him. He's an elite goalie, but Dustin Wolf is awesome. And man, he's fun to watch. He skates. I think he's the best skating goalie in the NHL. Maybe Igor Shesterkin right there with him, but his skating is unbelievable. And it has to be. He's not the biggest guy. He's 6 foot, just a little bit bigger than UC Saros. That was kind of the question marks for him coming into the NHL. Is he going to be big enough? I think he's proven that he is. He skates really well. He moves around the crease. I love his edge work. His details when the puck's in tight to him, and he's only getting better. This is the first season. I don't think anyone expected him to come in and play this well right away. Like Jacob Markstrom had been the guy there for so long. They finally move on from him. It's a different era. I expected more speed bumps in transitioning to Dustin Wolf, and he's just come right in and been awesome right away. So no, I won't be surprised at all if he's the best goalie in the Pacific in the very near future.
Jesse, we appreciate your time. Enjoy the game tonight, a big one, Dallas and Vegas. We'll have that on Sportsnet. We appreciate it. We'll chat soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
That's Jesse Granger of The Athletic. You can find his work there. It does goalies and Vegas Golden Knights. And we're talking about goaltending matchups. You mentioned a Wolf and Thompson is a big one. We've got that on Sportsnet West, a 9 p.m. start. Two of the top five goalies in the NHL.
Yeah, might be a bit of a stretch. Seven? Might be a bit of a stretch. We're talking about
top
like the
10.
Future. Yeah, certainly. These guys are performing at a really high level. Both could garner some Vezina votes, down ballot votes.
One can get a Calder
potentially
ballot
as well.
Vote.
Potentially Justin Wolf is in that conversation. I guess I was going to say looking future in the Pacific Division, Askarov might be the goaltender of the future. Things could at least change with the young goaltenders emerging in that division. But you mentioned the game on Sportsnet West tonight. That's where my best bet is. I like the Capitals on the puck line. I love Dustin Wolf. I think he should win the Calder, at least based on his body of work so far. But when the Capitals start Logan Thompson, they don't lose. Mm-hmm. And when Alexander Ovechkin sniffs an empty net, he doesn't miss. So I think the Caps will be in control of this game, and maybe he doesn't have to actually beat Dustin Wolf to ensure that the Capitals win on the puck line tonight, plus 180.
You should parlay that with an Ovi goal.
It's not a bad idea. When I get greedy, it tends to backfire, though.
True. Just keep it simple. Okay, I'm keeping it simple, too, with a goaltender-related pick. I'm going on the Jets puck line tonight, plus 150. It's Hellebuyck versus Montembeau.
Listen, they're both going to the Four Nations.
They are. One probably getting a little bit more ice time than the other.
Likely. Yeah.
Yes. So I like that one when I look at the goaltending matchups tonight. I mean, I'll give the credit to the Canadians. They were on a little hot streak. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10. But we know that Hellebuyck is going to run away with the Vezina, and the Jets are running away with the Central Division. So I like them to win comfortably tonight.
Yeah, that's a big all-Canadian matchup there.
There you go.
Jets and Montreal. Love it.
We've got Boston and Buffalo, a little less thrilling matchup between those two on Sportsnet to kick things off. But Dallas and Vegas at 10 p.m. Will follow up. We've got a couple basketball games for you on the network. It's the LA versus Philadelphia. I can't read my writing sometimes. On Sportsnet 1 at 7:30, Milwaukee and Portland at 10 p.m. So we got enough for you. We got a couple games on Sportsnet Plus as well, a bunch of hockey across Sportsnet Plus.
Yeah, Dallas-Vegas rematch of a couple days ago is pretty entertaining. game. So hopefully they have an encore set for us with the rematch of last year's first round series. No way Dallas Vegas should be a first round series.
No,
like those two teams
doesn't seem
too
fair.
Good to be meeting in a first round, but that's kind of the state of the Western Conference right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and we look at what the Eastern Conference matchups could be.
A little less dynamic.
A little less dynamic. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night. That was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Have a great night.